Rich Kimble, Bruce Pratt, Carrie Haskell. We're brought to you, as always, by Cross Insurance. We get the hour underway this afternoon by welcoming back to the program a former NFL scout and general manager, pioneering sports broadcaster, the author with Ron Borges of the wonderful book, Present at the Creation. Happy to be joined, as always, by Upton Bell. Hello, sir.
Happy to be with you, Rich, and also happy to advise your great owner, Stephen King, to write a book called The Ghost of Garoppolo. which would be, Stephen, if you're listening, yeah, I know you're a great Red Sox fan, but believe me, the ripoff of New England and the Jimmy Garoppolo show on every sports talk show is a King horror movie. I guess, Stephen, please, give it to us. Anyway, great to be with you guys.
I sense from your posts on social media that you've become a little frustrated of the sports radio and sports TV programs in Boston. You were, as I mentioned, a pioneer in this before anybody else was doing it. So when did it change, Upton? When did it become important to not offer analysis, but just pure speculation?
And paralysis. I think what really changed, see, the good thing and the reason that I like to do your show along with other people, you get to the point and then you move on. It used to be that sports talk was 2 hours, and you had to get everything in 2 hours, including your guests. So you couldn't sit there for what is now 4 hours. So it's been double, and go on and on and on about any subject, whether it's the Celtics, Bruins, Red Sox. You know, you have Chad Finn on, you have a lot of Boston people on. I think that really hurt it. I know that the radio stations want to get more for their money, so they do 4 hours. They have to hire less people, and they can jam in a lot more commercials. That's fine. I understand the business. But what it has done to the sports talk industry, and why I would never do it again, is basically it is a long taffy pull every day. How do you fill the time? Luckily, they've got this Jimmy G thing. They've got the Patriots for the first time, you know, picking early enough in the draft. The other thing that really has changed, and this is overall nationally, this is an amazing phenomenon. Back in 1935, Burt Bell said, if we don't have a draft, and if the lower teams like mine, and his was the worst, aren't able to compete with the four teams, the Giants, the Bears, the Washington Redskins, and believe it or not, the Green Bay Packers, he said this league is going under. So he convinced the owners to have a draft, and the draft would be in the inverse order of your one-loss record. And naturally, he ended up in 1936 with the first pick in that draft, and he drafted. And this carries over to today, Rich, which is amazing. His first pick was the All-American and Heisman Trophy winner, Jay Berwanger, out of the University of Chicago.
Right.
And Berwanger, when he heard that Burt Bell drafted him, decided not to play football. This is the first choice ever. In that draft, and this is why I want to get to my main thrust here, that it's always been and always will be a crapshoot. And I can tell you, as somebody who ran 10 drafts and was pretty damn successful, and by successful, I barely did 50%. and we went to two Super Bowls and many playoffs. But what happened that first year, first of all, good for ESPN, the media, now the NFL. I mean, they promoted this into the second biggest event since God was born, in a manger and the Super Bowl, and the ratings will do better than the Academy Awards. But what has happened here is that when they had the first draft, it was at his father's hotel, the Ritz-Carlton in Philadelphia, only because none of the owners could afford 2 or 3 days at any hotel. And the first draft was held there in 1936. They had like 9 or 10 rounds. Nobody had any film. Nobody had any tape. Nobody had any scouting books. Nobody had any scouts. They relied upon newspaper clippings and a few calls to coaches that they knew around the country. What came out of that first draft? 3 of the players in that first draft in the first round went to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Mm. The 4th player was Bear Bryant,
wow,
the legendary Alabama coach who decided not to play pro football. My point is, it was less than 50% then. Go look at it now. It's still the same. With all the scouting reports, with all the video, with all the pro day, with all the Indianapolis, you know, the combine. Jesus, please. I can tell you this. On the scouting I did, we had computers. We gave short Wunderlich tests, IQ tests. But what we did is we decided, as my legendary friend and the person I hired at the Bakers, Buck O'Kilroy, said, over-analysis presents paralysis. and this is what we have gotten out of this whole thing. And again, the media knows how to play it. The teams know how to play it. The players know how to play it. The agents play it. It is one huge Viva Las Vegas game. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not sitting here saying, oh, my God, this is so terrible. It's modern times. But I go back to the arithmetic. I go back to the drafts that I was most successful in were the drafts. I got the height, the weight, the speed. I looked at the film. I looked at the person's IQ test. For football, not IQ in the real world. And if I had a hunch, I went with it. And the first draft I ever had, I had 6 hunches. 5 of them picked in the first 6 rounds, went on to play full careers in the NFL. 3 of them were borderline Hall of Famers. And that was my first draft at the age of 25.
So, you drafted Jim Plunkett, right?
No, I did not.
No.
I recommended to the Patriots because the Colts would not let me leave, even though I was hired for the draft. But I had made him the number one and the number one quarterback in the country here, and so they took him. And I didn't want to trace back to me. But when I look at all the people, Julius Adams in the second round, everybody said, who the hell is he? He's from nowhere. He went on and played 10 years. You know, you look at the drafts here early on and look at the drafts at the Colts. That was done because people, and I have an objection to this also in baseball, the nerds have taken over. and again, this is not disrespecting them. It's just telling you that you have to have a feel about a person. You have to, with everything that's said and done, and it's interesting, I look it up. I'd love for you guys, because you get celebrities on from all over the country, I'd love for you to get Nick Saban on, or go to something I think I put out on Twitter, that Saban did a 3 or 4 minute piece for the media, where he talked about the draft, and talked about the players, because he was a pro coach at one time, and he had gone through the draft. And he basically said, you know, you spend the first part in the meeting saying everything you can. Height, weight, speed, runs great, smart as hell, great competitor, got the size to play. And then he says, and this is so true, Rich, the second part he says, and then we have all the things that he can't do. And so we talk about, oh, he was arrested as a freshman. Oh, he got in a dining hall fight. Oh, he dropped his girlfriend. Oh, you know what? He can't do this thing. And he said, before it's over, and I'm just paraphrasing, Saban, before it's over, the guy went from a number one to like a free agent. So this is what happens when you spend so long. For the league, great promotional. I mean, the hugging contest starts tomorrow night, and it will be a big thing. And think about this. Mel Kiper would be probably working in a cafeteria if he didn't come up with an idea that ESPN jumped on.
Right.
And now he's second only to the great Mahatma Gandhi.
Yeah. You
know? look what we've done.
We're talking with Upton Bell on Downtown. I want to go back to the first draft that your father, Bert Bell, convinced the other owners to do. Were they all on board at the time with the idea of having some level of competitive balance? Did they see that that was what was best for the league?
Absolutely no. Because remember, the major cities, except for Green Bay, Washington, New York, Chicago, are the most powerful families in the business. The Maras, George Halas family, George Preston Marshall, and Curly Lambeau, who's in the Hall of Fame. And actually, at that time, Green Bay really had money. And they're looking at it, and they say, well, wait a minute. We continue to win. We're getting good crowds. I mean, that was a... Remember earlier, a guy by the name of Cash and Carrie Pyle, who was a famous agent, signed a Red Grange on with George Halas, and they did like the bum of the month. This guy played, they played every week, every other week, and in the middle of the week. But it really popularized pro football. So my father and Art Rooney had come in with their franchises at the same time in 1933. But they were both losing their shirts and didn't have great players and were going to go out of business. But what happened in the end, and I think that's how Bert Bell ended up being chosen as the commissioner of pro football, is that he had the great ability to convince people that were rich as far as football was concerned at that time. Big egos. I convinced them, If we don't do this, we're going to go out of business. And I can tell you this, the draft should be named Bert Bell Day. It never will be, because without him, there would be no draft. There would be no NFL. There would be no NBA draft. Look at everybody that copied it. The other thing that a lot of people don't know is that there were many challenges, judicial challenges, that the draft was illegal. I mean, he had to go to Congress, I don't know how many times. He was the first person to register himself as a full-time lobbyist. We used to get on the train as kids and get down to Washington with him. And even through the Johnson years when he was Senate Majority Leader, he had to go in and fight all the time that this was not a monopoly. And the draft was many times challenged in court. So he saw so far ahead what was going to happen. And finally, he convinced George Halas, who was the power at that time.
Right.
And Halas said, you know, Bert's got something good here. Maybe we ought to do it. And, of course, it's the most successful thing that the NFL ever did and gives every team. Look at the woeful Jacksonville Jaguars. My God. You know what? They couldn't make the Boston Park League, and they're going to get the best player in the country. They should say thank you, Bert Bell. They're going to get Trevor Lawrence, and so everybody's excited about Trevor Lawrence. He's on 60 Minutes. He's everywhere. You know, and that's what's happened. The only two people in this draft that I can tell you, and again, it's still a guess, that I would say are locks, are Trevor Lawrence, and mark this down, probably will change the position of the tight end. And that's a guy by the name of Kyle Pitts out of Florida. Mm. Incredible. Can run faster than most wide receivers, about 240 pounds. He's originally a high school kid that I knew about in Philadelphia. He will change, as Gronkowski did the position, assuming that he doesn't get injured. The rest of it, gentlemen, as they say, start your engines, but hold back. One of the person I really do like, they keep talking about Jimmy G and all of these quarterbacks, and it's going to be interesting because the first four or five picks are going to be quarterbacks, and some of them I don't like that much. But keep your eye on a quarterback by the name of Justin Fields out of Ohio State.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I had my choice, I would take him over everybody.
Yeah.
Now, Upton, let me ask you, when you began your scouting career, what did you look at numbers at all? Did you look at 40 times? Did you base it solely on what you saw with your own eyes?
Well, I used all the tools that we had at that time, which is pretty much what we have today, a little bit more. But the other thing is, here's where I was lucky. I was the son of a former quarterback. I was the son of a coach, although he would say he wasn't a very good pro coach. So I grew up around football players. And even as a 8 or 9 year old, I mean, I was going around the country with my father. I was going to training camp. So I began to watch. The quickness of the feet were more important to me than the speed of the 40-yard dash.
Sure.
The short pass, the quick release on the quarterback. The offensive lineman, in those days, you couldn't hold like you did today. What was his footwork like? Could he dance? All of those things, I as a child, a 9, 10, 11-year-old, kind of absorbed. So when I started out in the scouting department, I was only 23 years old. But what I did is I began to recall, I'd fill out the scouting reports. I went all over the country. But I remembered those things. I'd say to Don Shula, he said, Upton, he's 40, ain't very good. And I said, yeah, but watch the quickness. Look how quick his feet were. And so I began to develop some of the things that I learned as a young boy, just, being around training camps. And so that helps. Certainly, football intelligence, very, very important. 40-yard dash for some people, I think, was very, very important. And the irony is that people don't realize the reason that it's still used today is Paul Brown, who was the greatest innovator that the sport ever knew, said the most that a pro football player will ever run is 40 yards. And he's right when you think about it.
Right.
How many linemen, Rich, run over 5 or 10 yards? How many defensive linemen run over 5 or 10 yards? The only people that run 40 yards are receivers and running backs. So I kind of made up my own mind about things, although every school you went to, they wanted you to run their people and say, look, he might not be able to block this guy, but look at his 40-yard dash. I say, Jesus, oh my God. This is unbelievable. But I developed, I listened to coaches. I was able to tell, I think, what schools I went to where the head coach or his assistants would be trying to sell me the player versus going to the schools when they would either not sell you the player at all, not push him at all, and I began to even develop my own mind about that. If they're not selling him, even though he's got these great reports, what do they know that I don't know?
Right. Upton, by the way, I wanted to thank you because you got us together a month or so ago with Sidney Blumenthal, and we had a wonderful time talking about Abraham Lincoln with him.
Well, he's there. There is a really interesting story, and I'm glad you did because Sidney's a terrific writer. I got to know Sidney because when Bob Lobel and I were doing Calling All Sports, I got this call from this freelance guy. He said, listen, I'm Sid Blumenthal, and I'm going to write a story for Boston Magazine called Knights of the Keyboard. You can go online and find it somewhere. And he said, I want to come and interview you and Lobel. How talk radio and the electronic media deal with the people in the press box, the writers? And at that time in the 70s, the writers hated the electronic media. They'd stick us in the back of Fenway Park, and you know, we were not people to be talked to, because the Augusta written media were the people. He wrote a whole story on it for Boston Magazine. It was great. So we kept in touch, and here's this freelancer who actually lived right around the corner from me in a really small little apartment near Harvard Square. And today he's one of the great writers in America, worked in the Clinton White House. You know, he also, and I should have remembered to tell you at the time, he, and I'm going to have it in my big book collection when it comes out, is that he wrote a terrific article on Abraham Lincoln and baseball. And when baseball was played right on the White House ground. Did you know that?
I did not know that, no. Well, that's wonderful. And by the way, it's funny, when he was on with us too, I got a message from Steve Buckley of The Athletic, and Buck said that when he was in high school, Sid Blumenthal was working at a teen center in Cambridge. Buck was a grad student at the time, Blumenthal was a grad student at the time, and they ended up talking about how Steve wanted to become a writer someday, and he thought that was pretty amazing that all these years later, because I think Buck was on the show the day after Sidney was on with us.
He was. Well, Buck's a great guy, and I talked to him a while ago. See, there is so much great history, and this is, I really want to get back to your listeners and the way you do a show. What we are missing here, and I'll stick right now to sports talk, although general talk is completely different. What we miss is people unwilling to go back in history and do what you do, or do the present history. What we have fallen into on sports talk is the repetition of either, it's like you're watching what's going on in Congress with, let's say, the Republicans. Keep repeating a lie long enough and people believe it. So instead of really getting out there and doing interesting people and subjects, and yes, you can talk about the Celtics, Bruins, Red Sox ad nauseum, but suppose you drop in occasionally somebody like Roger Angel at the age of 100, still really a terrific interview, talking about what baseball was. Or the Roger Cons, he's dead now, but the Boys of Summer, or the great football stories. But no, we're getting 4 hours of the same thing.
Hey, listen, if you can hook us up with Roger Angel, we're in for that, Upton.
Let me see if I can get in touch with him.
That would be great. And by the way, I have to add this, because I will admit when I'm wrong, and it happens a lot. You and I were going back and forth Sunday night about the Oscars, and it turns out you were right. Obviously, with the way it ended, they did not do a great job with that.
Well, it was really bad. And you know what, again, when we get our entertainment, please keep the politics out, both sides of it. And it's interesting. Howard Baldwin is a friend of mine. This other than I want to get on with you, that started out in hockey, and now he's a big producer in Hollywood. And basically, I was telling him yesterday, I said, have you seen Carey Mulligan's movie? Have you seen that, Rich?
I have. It was based on your recommendation, I watched it.
Okay. So I said, Howard, you have to see this. He said, well, we're negotiating with her right now to play the life of Marlena Dietrich.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So, again, there are so many fascinating people out there. I'm going to get him for you, because what a life. A guy starts out in the ticket office at the Flyers and ends up with his own team, WHA team, in here and in Hartford. And the next thing you do, you know, his movie won the Academy Award for Jamie Foxx on the life of Ray Charles. Mm.
Well, Upton, it is always a treat for us to get to talk with you. As always, thank you so much for making time for us this afternoon, and I hope we get to do it again before too long.
Thank you, Rich. And don't forget, Stephen King, the Jimmy Garoppolo story.
The Ghosts of Garoppolo coming this Halloween. Thank you, Upton.
Thanks, guys.
Upton Bye. Bell on Downtown.